Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Gotta love Sunday mornings. And who wouldn't want to be awakened by the folks at the Big Blue Door? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, it is the Barbershop Quartet. We have with us Joel Jones.
Good morning.
And Marjorie Ruderman.
Good morning.
Sarah Adams.
Good morning.
David Luzader.
Good morning. Oh, no. I messed it up.
Big Blue Door, we're here to do some long-form improv comedy, right?
Sure, we're here to do whatever you want us to do, man.
Or at least we'll discuss long-form improv comedy and do a little bit throughout the hour and talk about what else goes on down at the Big Blue Door at McGuffey, correct?
Yep. We have a studio, second floor, McGuffey Art Center, Studio 20, for anyone taking notes.
Well, you want to take notes because there's something going on later today.
We've had a couple shows this weekend, and we do have one class starting. It's almost, I think it is full, but we could probably slip one more in. It's a Telling True Stories class starting later this afternoon at 3:30.
Yeah, we'll get a little bit more detail on that. And something going on later in September and everything that goes on. At the Big Blue Door, because I find it fascinating. I love having you guys on every year, telling us what's happened, what's happening. Give us a little show about all that. Long form improv. I think everybody knows something about improv comedy, or thinks they do, because you've seen it on HBO or somewhere.
You know, they always have the stand up comics performing in places with brick walls that say the improv, which is weird because they're not doing improv, right? I guess it's not that weird. It seemed weird to me.
But so we're starting. Tell me, what is improv and how do you do it?
Well, improv is making it up, and people have been doing that for forever. The system of improv that in the United States that's used came about originally in the 1950s. In Chicago, there was a group called the Compass Players, I think, and they wanted to do some plays, and they didn't have written stuff, so they tried to figure out how to make up the plays. And at the time, they didn't know how to, like, rehearse them. So they had a woman, Viola Spolin, her son was part of them, and she, in the Great Depression at work camps for the WPA, this is a really long history, by the way. Sorry. Had come up with adult entertainment, these games for people to play. And so they started using the games as training. And then when their plays weren't very good, they started performing the games. And that started what we now call short-form improv. And eventually they moved to St. Louis for a while. And then they worked out scene rules, which we'll talk about a little bit. And then later on, another guy, Del Close, mostly, and other people worked out some rules for doing longer sets of scenes where the scenes are connected, and that's called long form. And usually when people talk about long form, they also include a specific way of training people to do that. And I came from the Magna Theater and other theaters in New York. I went to UCB and Pitt Theater and Magna Theater, but I was trained to be a teacher and came down and started Big Blue Door with my wife. This is starting our eighth season. And so our training system is a way that anybody can learn to do that.
I'm curious from, I'm assuming that Marjorie and Sarah and David, all students and possibly beyond that now?
We're graduates.
Yes.
Graduates.
We practically have PhDs in improv.
Yeah, but we did come up through the Big Blue Door program, three different levels of improv taught by Joel himself.
Yeah. So now you're here with us today to talk about it, as well as do some improv through listeners.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mostly
absolutely.
As well as myself. I get to, it's like I get getting my own show. That's part of the fun of getting to decide who comes on Wake Up Call. So Can you tell me the difference between first, second, and third? There are three levels?
Yeah, it's really the quality of the person more than anything. No, it's not true.
So can you tell me a little bit who wants to take over from here? Sarah, David, Marjorie?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, they're both looking at me, so I guess I got volunteered there. It's been a while since I've gone through them, but the Improv 1, you're really just kind of learning the basics of it. You're really just kind of getting a feel for what it means to get out on stage and to start a scene. And then in Improv 2 is taking those ideas, you know, you learned how to start a scene, how to do a short scene, and then how to eventually come back and revisit those ideas in different ways. And then I feel like anybody want to hop in here? Improv 3 is continuously building on the, it's seriously been like 5 years since I've gone through it. So I know Sarah went through it a lot more recently.
Yeah. The first class that I took was last May. And so I guess the thing that stuck out most to me in the first class was it was mostly about creating interest. So it was mostly looking at just genuine conversations and finding where you found interest and creating scenes based off of that, which I thought was very applicable to life, which is one of the big pulls for the first class. And then the second class is just getting more structure with what you find interesting and creating those scenes. And then the third class, I think, is getting structure with scenes in a bigger picture. So we do things like Heralds, where we have scenes in group games, and it kind of has its own long-form big picture.
Yeah, when they first started improv in the 50s, the people doing it had a theater background, and they had taken theater classes, and one of the ways they analyzed plots of shows is central conflict. There's a conflict between a protagonist and antagonist. So when they were trying to do these short scenes, they thought the best way to do them initially was to have this conflict. So they create these conflicts, and the scenes were awful, just unwatchable, just painful. And so then they, just for fun, just started doing the opposite of trying to match and create agreement. And for a four-minute scene, that agreement is what we work on. You're learning to sort of radically listen and agree with other people, but without giving up your own point of view. So instead of me just letting you write the scene while I become this passive recipient of it, we both take ownership and kind of go back and forth building the thing together, each contributing the part we want to contribute.
And we continue to do that in once we've graduated from the classes. Those are still the same skills we work on in our rehearsals. And a lot of my friends always ask, how can you rehearse for improv? And it's really about practicing those basic skills of listening, finding what interests you, and, building a scene with your scene partner out of that.
All right, so we have our guests today from the Big Blue Door. We have Joel Jones, Marjorie Ruderman, David Luzader, and Sarah Adams. And I'd like to hear, what would you call it? Is it a show?
A scene? So you gave us this thing. You said you and a friend were trying to start a restaurant?
Well, it's a conversation starter. It's a bag of things that we found in ads. It goes back a long
way.
But
let me just tell you, listeners. So you were going to start a restaurant, and your idea was there was going to be a date table. And the date table, you would have these things out. So this is a big envelope I'm holding.
Well, actually, it's
call it an envelope, but it's really this enormous trunk. I mean, it takes up half the room.
Oh, wow. Right?
It is. So, yeah, we're actually on each other's shoulders currently.
We were going to plaster these all over a table, and it was so that you could – it was going to be a conversation starter, so they were going to be all over the table, that wall, that those – wherever, so you could just look all along and go and just sort of run your finger along it and find something and go, oh, okay, there's one. Let's talk about this.
So I'm sure after the fourth night of pina coladas being spilled on these pieces of paper, they would have
been
a great way to start a thing.
They would have been under plexiglass.
He's thought about this, Joel. Come on.
But you have to remember, this goes back 25 or 30 years now.
Well, 25 years ago, it was definitely would have worked.
Joel, move your pina colada so it doesn't spill.
I had to go find it in an old trunk.
That's cool. Anyway, so I just was letting you where this stuff comes from. I'm going to ruffle through this. I'm going to pull one of these things out of here for these guys to try to work with. It says...
And I'm not going to tell you the first one may be old date, so...
Ye old dress code, that's with an E, an old day. Ye old dress code. Short skirts are for loose women. Wool suits are for librarians.
Brenda, I've called you into my office because we've had complaints about your pantaloons.
Oh, I. Is it because the bright neon colors are distracting?
It's partly the bright neon colors and partly the fact that your ankles are showing beneath the ruffle.
Oh, well, I thought, you know, in the current year that we're in, here in 2019, I could display my ankles for anyone to see, Mrs. Smythe.
I'm afraid that as part of your performance review, I'm going to have to ask you to wear this scarlet A.
And scene. Even the best can get better.
Twenty-one, 22, 23. Whew. All right, feeling that burn. All right, how you doing over there?
Well, honey, I'm not sure this is a great first date.
No. I just pick up that kettlebell at your feet, and I just want you to hoist it over your head, and like I really want to get that blood flowing.
But
pick up the kettlebell.
All right.
One. All right, again.
Fine.
I gotta be honest, I've never seen a woman heave a kettlebell like that before.
And scene. Great test scores make you look better.
Honey, do you think this SAT score makes me look fat?
The math section is just really slimming. It really, really is.
I'm worried that you're just saying that because we're going out to this cocktail party and everybody else there has such great scores.
To be honest, the reading could do some improvement, but like I said, the math is so slimming.
Why didn't you mention that before?
Because your reading scores are still better than mine.
And scene. More? All right, more. A golf cover-up?
All right, I appreciate you meeting me in this dark alley. I have something you might find interesting.
Everything you bring to this dark alley is interesting to us.
I know that. I recently found out that Tiger Woods did not shoot 2 under par like he said he did.
Oh, that's fascinating. Fascinating.
I'm befuddled.
That's a very strong reaction. Please watch your language. But how much is this information worth to you? I probably shouldn't have given it to you before.
Seems free.
You did offer it free. That was what was interesting to me. Actually, not very interested in golf, but the fact that you were willing to give that
information. Well, that was just the first in the first hole. I've got other hole scores here as well. The first time's always free.
I didn't bring my wallet.
I accept payment in song.
And scene. You're no John Kennedy. We are back with You're No John Kennedy, the show where no one here is John Kennedy. Well, let's introduce our panel for today.
I'm John Smith.
I'm John Kennedy, spelled with an I.
And I'm John Kinney.
That's great. So we've got some calls in from people at home asking some questions. So what's it like not being John Kennedy?
Oh, well, you know, I've not been John Kennedy my whole life, so I don't even think about it anymore. I mean, when I was young, I'd wake up every day and look in the mirror and be like, another day not being John Kennedy. But you know, now it's just who I am.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm so close. People are like, oh, John Kennedy. And I say, yeah, but with an I. And they get that disappointed look in their face that reminds me of my father.
Your father also had a... He was disappointed in you for having...
For not being John Kennedy with an E.
That's confusing. Wouldn't he also be...
We have a very tumultuous relationship.
Oh, great. Okay. Maybe we'll hear more about it later.
Every day I'm filled with gratitude that I'm not John Kennedy. I just wake up, it's the first thought I have every single day. It's the best part of my life.
Yeah, reduces assassination chances, huh? We have a question from one of our viewers at home. What if you were a John Kennedy, which John Kennedy would you be?
God, when I was little, I would spend a lot of time thinking about the vast array of John Kennedys and kind of making lists of which ones I'd want to be and which ones I wouldn't want to be. And, you know, after years of therapy, I just decided it was a fruitless line of thought. And now I try not to go there because it's very depressing.
I would be the John Kennedy whose father respects him. I'm sorry, I told myself I wouldn't do this on air.
I'm sorry to... take a moment for yourself if you
Thank
need
you.
To.
Thank you.
Here's a tissue.
Thank you.
I find all of this very unrelatable. I'm just so grateful to not be any John Kennedy. I mean, I guess if I had to, I'd be a Jack. But, you know, John
That brings
is...
up our next question. Johnny, John, Jack. Which one?
I mean, I was called all of those things when I was a kid, but it took years of work, and eventually I realized just... grateful to be called at all.
Whichever one my dad wants me to be called.
Oh, have the whole box of tissues.
Thank you.
Jack.
Okay, can we get this person out of here?
Scene. let's do one more. Here, let's see what I got here. Hot water is heavier than cold.
No, I swear to God, if you drop this hot water balloon, it will fall faster than the cold one.
Look, your theories are insane. Look, we're just trying to prank Tim. We don't need to get science involved in this.
It's more of a hypothesis than a theory, which makes a huge difference when you're dropping water balloons.
All right, look. I just wanted to get him back for using my coffee cup, and you're the one talking about dropping hot. Like, hot, that seems dangerous.
Well, hey, guys. I used your coffee cup again. Sorry. Well, take it easy. Hey, okay. What's with the balloons?
Nothing. It's Sally's birthday.
It's my birthday!
Happy birthday, Sally.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, Sally, here's the $5. Thanks for that. All right, get the hot water. We're going to boil that. We're going to...
And scene.
And here we are with the folks from Big Blue Door. David Luzader, Sarah Adams, Marjorie Ruderman here doing long-form improv comedy here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Awesome. Is that what happens when you do a show? I mean, everybody gathers together, and do folks throw out things from the audience?
Yeah, we do gather around a microphone.
That's actually exactly what we do each time, that exact what you saw there.
Joel is throwing out ideas.
We usually get some kind of suggestion or idea from the audience. Sometimes it's just we ask for a word, any word, and then, you know, we sort of think quickly about what ideas come to our minds from the words and initiate scenes. Or Last night, I was in a two-person forum where we asked the audience for an example of a work difficulty or a problem that they'd have had that they would have liked expert advice about.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and finish that up. Hang tight. And back in action here with folks from Big Blue Door, Joel Jones, the gentleman who initiated Big Blue Door. Did you tell me 8 years ago?
Yes, sir. I don't know how you do math, but it's the
I don't do it the way they do it now in public schools.
Do they do it? I remember in church learning that they used to use inclusive numbering, right? So that we think of when you're 7 years old, they would say you were eight because your first year is when you were born or something like that. And I've never understood. It blew my mind, and I'm still confused about it. 55 years later. We're starting our eighth season, so we're excited about that. I founded it originally with my wife, Jen, and I. In the first year, I taught classes mostly through other local institutions, and then we did a big storytelling show for the Moth kind of, that we ran a couple of years. And then as our improv program grew, that kind of took over the show more and more, and so we mostly do improv now.
Yeah.
Although we have a storytelling show class starting in a couple hours.
So let's talk about that for a few minutes. You are starting a new class.
Yeah, we teach about two or three, by we, I mean me, teaches about other people help with the improv teaching, like Marjorie here. But we do two or three True Stories classes a year, and every other year we do like a True Stories 2, level 2 class. So it's a standard part of what we do still, but we don't have a regular True Story show anymore. We do class showcases for that. A couple of years ago, we ran a storytelling series during the summer. BK Marcus ran that for us, and year before that, we had some other. So from time to time, we'll run storytelling series again. But we don't do as much of it. We don't have time. We just don't have time.
No, you're that busy. Got that many people.
Well, you know, you got just you know. Life is filled with such important things that you can't do everything you love, right? So we only have about, there's a limited number of venues and the amount of advertising you can do and get the word out. So we really can only do about three shows a month. We find with, if we do more than that, they don't work as well. So we're just trying to keep our improv runs going and then have the storytelling. It's also, you know, Jen was such a part of that, and she had to go back to work, or the work that pays, that pays more than this. So we just couldn't really run the show as big, and we didn't have a venue for it. It was just a lot of reasons. I don't know what I'm doing right now. I'm just kind of babbling. Is this interesting to anyone?
You're doing well. You're talking about Big Blue Door.
Oh, Big Blue Door. Oh, that. Yeah. So it's great. So we do about three shows, and then we don't do as many story shows. We'd love to. We have done other writing kinds of shows, and hopefully one of the exciting things I think we're going to do this season is bring back, you know me from doing offstage theater before this, and we did Bar Hoppers.
Bar Hoppers has always been one of my favorite things that Charlottesville ever did.
Yeah, so I think we're going to bring back some kind of bar series, hopefully with Offstage Theater's partners, we'll be able to do Bar Hoppers itself. But if not that, then we'll do a series of bar shows or some other play.
Yeah,
I'd like these same awesome performers that are such great improvisers to have a chance to do scripted plays, especially with short scripts, so there's not a huge learning curve in terms of learning lines. And just as like a thing I always wanted to do with Bar Hoppers before was have a cast, you know, have a acting troupe essentially, and so having them. Those who want to be in an acting troupe and do all the plays in that kind of way would be, I think, awesome.
Yeah, that's how I met you and Jen.
Yeah.
I loved Bar Hoppers in the original form of Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. I adored having Bar Hoppers group come to Sunday Morning Wake Up Call and sort of do pieces and rotate. Talk about a riot act.
Yeah.
As my producer Dan mentioned, having this group of four come in and sort of perform do some improv comedy here, having the Bar Hoppers group come in and rotate 14 people in and out of the studio. That was tremendous and so much fun, and the powerful energy to do that on a Sunday morning. That was
tremendous. Thanks for making these three people feel bad.
Yeah. No, but
sorry that you're not 14 people.
But the fun.
Actually, we did bring 10 more if they want to introduce themselves.
The fun of having a group of performers, four people in here today, is great. But, you know, the more people that you have with the each person brings so much energy and their own personality in here. And it's just so great. I'd love to have the Bar Hoppers back. And when you get to
doing
that.
Yeah, so if we do, I want to do some kind of scripted show, hopefully that. And if we do it, then I mean, I would not want to call something Bar Hoppers unless Offstage Theater wanted us to do it, because, you know, I don't want to step on toes, but we would do some kind of, we're going to do a scripted show of some kind. And also, I did Coffee House with Live Arts many years ago. And you remember, I think we were a guest on either you or when you were with Coy doing a show then, weren't you, I think?
The very old days. Yeah, talk about the.
We'd crank up the Victrola and put on.
Let's see, the original year or two.
It should have been here back before people like you showed up.
I think that was before there was actual energy. We had to give notes and have people run it to the next house the house after that.
And the mule working around that spiral thing to crank the generators. That was something else.
Well, so do you think there is room for somebody who might be interested in joining the class today? There's room for one more, possibly?
For the Telling True Stories. And also, we have Improv Ones running on Sundays in September, and then that's on our website, bigbluedoor.org, which I should have mentioned already and may mention again, bigbluedoor.org. But Improv One is a really fantastic course with no homework. So you can come and take one day a week, and as Sarah was saying, it's completely different in a way than the way other things are taught, and will really get you thinking about things or just exploring a part of yourself in a way that you haven't. And it's not like I think there was some of that kind of stuff. Maybe I don't want to be negative, but I'm a negative person. No, but like in the 70s, you know, there was a kind of like sort of an artistic sort of culture that was about everything else is bad and this is good. But improv is not like that. It's a very controllable skill. You know, you're learning to develop a part of yourself that still allows you to use the other parts. You're not putting down all the analytical part of yourself, the judging part. That's all great for when you need to, you know, check the resume before you send it. But we also want you to just be to be able to listen and find what interests you about what someone else is saying and be able to respond to it and see how your imagination works and explore what you think about things, often for many people for the first time in their adult lives, or maybe in their whole lives, right? I'm just crying. Can you hear me?
It's tissue sad. Box that it's you, very sad.
It's a whole box. Anyway, so it's
the pressure.
It's tremendously fun, and people are tremendously funny. You know, it's not a kind of thing where we're looking for that one person who's a genius. And do you have that genius?
What's the cost?
The cost is
unless it's free.
It's not a cost, it's an investment. No, I'm kidding. It's a cost. $175, I think, is for the improv class, and $195 for the True Stories class.
For how many Sundays are you?
The True Stories is 6 sessions of 2.5 hours and then a class showcase. And the improv is 8 sessions of 2 hours.
Pretty cool.
And a class showcase, yeah.
Very cool.
And now while you're taking the classes, you can watch our shows for free. That's a great little perk. And also, who wouldn't want to spend 2 hours a week with me?
And you're being entertained at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's better than a subscription to Netflix, except you can't watch it at 11. You can't do improv at 11 o'clock.
And you're doing all this at the McGuffey Art Center.
Yes, McGuffey Art Center, Studio 20. So very excited. We didn't start at McGuffey, but we love being part of McGuffey. So I always want to talk up McGuffey Art Center. We often perform as part of their First Fridays up in our studio, and that's great fun. And just having the studio there is great as well.
Yeah, my wife and I went down to McGuffey, I don't know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago.
And only you came back.
No,
keep the story going.
She wanted to stay until it got really hot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the nice thing also about Semp, we do have air conditioning in the studios. However, the upstairs hall is pretty hot. So if you do come, don't wear a parka in the hall on the way from outside to our classroom. That's just a little life tip. Don't do that. But once you're in our classroom, you're fine. And also, in September, it gets cooler. But it is an old school. You know, McGuffey's an old school, and I don't know what they did back then before AC. I guess they were tougher people. They were better people, a hardier sort.
But there's other really cool things to look at and check out while you're on your way before or after checking out Big Blue Door.
Yeah, absolutely. McGuffey has multiple studios. There's one other performance studio as well. And they have new openings each month, basically. Or not every month, but almost every month. With three different... So you can come look at all kinds of art, including some good art.
Well, can we do some more improv?
Why not?
Long-form improv?
So you asked how we do start shows a lot. So I'll show you a couple different ways of doing it. One is we can work directly off individual words. Now, if you give us a word, we don't want to... So if you said the word was hammer or nail, we don't want three scenes of people hanging a picture, right? So you have to get some distance. So what we do, if you're working directly off a word, is you look for relationships or locations or points of view, analogies, something that gets you flipped away from the word to other things. You get used to your own free association. So, for instance, give us a word, any word at all.
Dream.
Dream. Okay, great.
She's the perfect girl for me.
Oh, my God. Oh, look. Just look at her. She's everything you've ever wanted.
She's so smooth and shiny.
And just and hairless.
Oh. 10 tiny fingers and 10 tiny toes.
Just bones not fully developed yet, a little squishy.
Oh, that perfect little soft spot on her head that you can't touch too hard. She's so frail.
Oh, yeah, she would definitely fit in a bread box. I'm really glad that we come down here.
Dream 2.
Thanks so much for coming in today. You've talked a lot about your dreams, and I'm a little concerned about just some of the content within them.
Oh, but you're always fully dressed in them, I swear.
I was more concerned about the violence.
I mean, yeah, you're always super angry in them, but I tell myself it's fine, it's fine. This is a therapeutic relationship, you know? She's not really angry. It's tough love.
But I don't want you to come from a place where you think that I have tough love for you. It's very gentle.
Love. You don't seem very gentle in my dreams, but...
Cut to the dream that night.
It hurts! It hurts! How dare you!
And scenes. Dream 3.
I got accepted. I'm going to college.
Son, I'm... I mean, I'm excited. I'm just surprised.
Honey, you can't be surprised every time he succeeds.
Well, I mean, he's my son, and I didn't go to college.
I wanted to raise our family up, and you know, I know I'm the first Rademacher to go to college, and I thought, are you proud, Papa?
Ooh, I'm proud I'm just saying, I'm surprised. The Rademachers are a humble people. I mean, you know, I'm still trying to get around the fact that you wear a shoe size, two sizes bigger than me.
See. Cool. So that's how you do scenes directly off a word. So let's do it differently, and give me another word. And I'll see if I can tell a story. Or do y'all want to do a story? Anybody? Me? Okay. Whatever. Any of us who does a story is fine. So give me another word.
Puddle.
Puddle. So one thing we do is try to maybe do a true story off of it. So puddle, does anyone have a story with puddle? You think of puddle.
Whenever I think of puddles, I for some reason think of Winnie the Pooh, which reminds me of this random time. I was really stressed in college, and I didn't sleep very often at all, but one day I was walking back from an exam, and I hadn't slept in what felt like days, and I just got hit in the face with this leaf, and all I could think about is what a blustery day, which is Winnie the Pooh, I think like a phrase that he like sings before they jump in puddles.
And great.
Doctor, it's like one of my eyes is just really dark.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not great. We definitely have a glaucoma front moving in.
Oh, God, I wish I had checked the forecast.
That's right. Well, as you can see right here, for the next 7 years, you're going to have a 70% loss of vision in that eye.
Oh.
And if this pressure system continues, the arthritis will also set in.
Oh, my God. I got to put up boards on my house, I guess.
See. I haven't slept for days, man. I'm just trying to get this LSAT studied for.
Oh, yeah, you came to the right place. Welcome to the late night study hall. Oh,
yeah, thanks, man. Thanks, man. I'm glad there's a place just, you know, I can stay awake.
Yeah. Here we just hook up the coffee right to the IV. So,
thanks, man. Just put it right there in the arm.
Yeah, there you go.
There should be a leftover spot somewhere.
You guys got any nicotine patches left?
I think we, Jimmy, we got any nicotine patches left?
I got a few nicotine patches left.
We got a few.
Thanks. The IV just doesn't do it for me. Oh. Slap these on. Slap them on.
Yeah, just dip wherever you still got room. But what score are you hoping there for, newcomer?
I want an energy drink.
Oh, all right. Oh, he's a real bad case. He's not even hearing what I'm asking.
See. Cool. Should we know one more off that? I guess we Oh, Piglet. Oh, Piglet.
A poo. It's getting real bad out there.
Yeah. I think that we're going to have to leave the 100-acre woods and move into a different kind of place.
No. This is all I've known my entire life. Where will we go, Pooh Bear?
I realize that you've actually been trespassing. Trespasser's Will is not the name.
That's squatter's rights. Squatter's rights.
So you knew this whole time.
A boy. I was hoping this would never come up.
Oh, here comes Kanga.
Oh, here I am.
So what happens when I'm here, I'm watching, and people are trying so hard at different parts not to burst out laughing? Well, how do you prevent that, and what happens if you do?
I think it's easier with a live audience to not laugh, right? Because they're laughing, so they do that work for you.
Kind of. Sometimes we're crying so hard that we can't even find the laughter.
There definitely are times where it's going to happen, and you just kind of have to go with it. If you're on stage, you just try to turn your face away. It's kind of the classic technique. Don't let them see you laugh.
Yeah, my goal is always maybe make it part of the scene if you laugh, but I haven't mastered that skill yet.
So that was a great question, Rick.
Yeah. Hey, I'm good for 1 hour. All right, let's take our second break. We'll hang tight, be right back. All right, we're back in action with the folks from the Big Blue Door. Today we've got Sarah Adams, Marjorie Ruderman, David Luzader, and Joel Jones, who's the founder with his wife. Jen from the Big Blue Door, doing some long-form improv comedy. Joel, you've got the True Stories class is about to start later today, correct?
That's right.
Bigbluedoor.org?
Oh, bigbluedoor.org or .org, whichever you prefer.
So one of the questions for you, when you're practicing, when you're taking the class, do you practice and learn by telling one story over and over?
True stories?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, with both improv and true stories, you know, performing in front of people is like one of the biggest human fears there is. So, you know, more than people are afraid of anything, they're afraid of standing in front of other people. So a lot of how we structure both things are how to use that fear in a positive way, how to just accept that that's part of who you are, and if it is part of who you are. And so introverted people often are very good at this stuff. With the stories, we often are just starting with very short, just talking a little bit and getting people to talk a little more and then talk a little more and kind of building up. I mean, I don't want to give away the structure of the class.
Right, nobody's paid. Yeah, listeners so we, haven't paid their well, $100, $200.
It's not the money. That's actually not it. It's just it doesn't work. Most of us have come from in America where we come out of our education was an expansion of teaching of the humanities, and the basic skill of the humanities is lecturing, right? It's lecturing. So lecturing becomes the way we teach everything else. And then you give lecture, and then people try to do it, and then you critique them. So you're trying to kind of break out of that mold because improv and other learned skills, carpentry, things like that, are not light, or don't benefit from that. You wouldn't learn to be a carpenter by me giving you an hour-long lecture on how you do carpentry and then having you come up and try to use a saw having never used it and then me critiquing how well you use the saw. That would be no. Everyone gets that for weaving or for baking is not – you want hands-on little pieces to bigger pieces to bigger pieces. So I can tell some people some ways to make their stories better on the air and happy to and it will. But there's not really a way to think about it first and then do it. That's a model of education that we have that helps you in certain kinds of fields, but is not useful for performing arts, in my opinion. Now, I would say that you can tell, if I can just be negative again, in a way, when people get caught up in like what talent is, like no one in the history department says whether someone's talented or not. Or in engineering even, right? They do it in the arts because the education methods are so bad that you're not actually teaching people things. You're instead looking for the people who can teach themselves, and then you're identifying people who can teach themselves as the talented ones. And there's some truth to that. You know, some people have that ability to teach themselves things in that way, but that doesn't tell you anything about who would actually be good at the skill if they learned it in a competent way. So you see in art departments, they often, you know, like, where we're going to find the people with have this magical ability? Well, it's not like that. It's like, so going back to, I'm going to roll here. So for teaching, we're trying to break things down into workable chunks, me giving a response to people, having people learn by doing, and trying to get them not to think about it too much. However, if you do have listeners who are interested in telling true stories, the things that can help them. One, and they're kind of, this is, might be counterintuitive, but one is to keep yourself the center of your story. So as much as you can, make yourself the center. And that's often difficult because many of the things that happen to us are other people had a profound influence on us or do things, bad things to us, right? So when we're telling the story, we also make them the center character. But human empathy or sympathy works with the narrative protagonist. So if a police officer pulls you over and mistreats you, for instance, and you tell the story about you're minding your own business and the police officer is just come, it's all, people wonder what the police officer is like, and so they identify with that character. So what you want to learn is to make yourself as much, just fight and fight to make yourself constantly the center. You know, I was riding and then I'm driving my car and then and then I hear a sound and then I pull my car over and then there's a tapping in the window. So you're just keeping yourself focused over and over. And we practice that over the course of the class, just working on doing that. So that's something that can help people a lot in telling stories, is just doing that. Also using details. A few details will help you and say how you felt about things. And finding a place where you were the active person. So if you imagine a little cartoon, if your listeners can imagine a cartoon, and there's a little character walking down a street and a piano falls on him, it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't have a sense of a story unless you're like a 14-year-old boy and you laugh at that because it's different from everything else. But if you have a little character walking down the street and they look up and there's two signs for the two different directions and they choose a direction to walk and a piano falls on their head, even though that's a cartoon, it makes no more justified than the other one, but somehow it feels like a story. You know, if you see that, you'd say, oh, that kind of makes sense, or it feels like it makes sense, whether or not it does.
Now I want to go take the class. And hopefully somebody else out there wants to go take the class, too, starting today at 3?
3:30. Yeah.
All right, McGuffey Arts Center, Big Blue Door.
And we also work on true stories, as we just heard, in our shorter ones, simpler ones, in our improv classes. Just many people are at their funniest when they're responding to reality, especially serious reality. So you can kind of build your own humor generator by being real and then reacting to it and being real and reacting to it. So that's kind of like why we use stories a lot as a sort of grounding for the improv that we do.
And you can go to the bigbluedoor.org website and find out all the dates for these things.
All the information you want in your life is at that website right now, waiting for you.
Yeah. I don't know if you can find any dates to see who's available and who's free for dinner or not, but you can go find out when the classes are being taught.
Yeah, every person who takes our class is guaranteed a free date. Yeah. That's just one of the perks of the class.
That's one of the perks of the class. Yeah, it's included in the money. Pay up and see what you can get back.
Yep.
All right.
And we have packets of conversation starters for everyone.
Let's do some more long form improv comedy with our guest today, Sarah Adams, Marjorie Ruderman, David Luzader, and Joel Jones here today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. This is 94.7, the progressive voice of comedy here today. Just no bad words.
Except for that. We are the progressive
voice. Except for the near voice.
It's all progressing now.
With our guests today from Big Blue Door. All right, here we go. Fire away.
So here's something pulled out of this envelope again, or envelope, as some people say. Will I be able to fix my house, finish my schoolwork, get enough rest, be civil to my family, go to work, and control my anger about the criminal ruling class? That's a side splitter there.
I just don't. There's just so. My brain is pulled in 10 million directions constantly, and I just feel like I can't get. I haven't left the house in 2 weeks.
Well, so. Thanks so much for inviting us over.
Thank you. Yeah, because I wasn't coming to you. That was for sure.
We don't want you to leave. We want to join you here. We also feel being pulled in a million different directions, and this is a safe space.
And it's also a space where there's a Hulu subscription, which is honestly the one thing that we're missing.
Yeah.
But also because we're just pulled in a million directions.
Well, yeah, I thank you for bringing your Netflix password, because... It's making it easier for me not to leave, because I've watched the entire Hulu catalog 6 times.
Wow, you've been here a long time.
And see, starfish have 8 eyes, one at the end of each leg.
I'm so excited to go to the aquarium. Thanks so much for taking us, Mom!
Oh, honey, just put on these sunglasses, okay? Because, you know, the octopus is very scary. If it gets a hold of your eyes.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the aquarium. Just right this way for the tour.
Cool.
And we're going to come over here, and we're going to get our first look at the angelfish.
Do not make eye contact, honey. Do not make eye contact.
But it's so small.
Don't make eye. That's how it does
it's
it.
Mostly eyes.
Look at me. I'm an angel.
It's like a solar eclipse.
And we're going to move on over here now to the sea turtles.
Turn your back, honey. Just turn your back.
Look. Why are we here if I can't
turn
look?
Your back.
Hey, come on. Look at me. Look at
me. We'll make you tougher.
And we're going to head on over now to our main attraction, the octopus.
Don't look. Don't look, honey. Don't look.
But I love him.
Hey, baby.
So many arms.
Come on. And let's have a hug. Let's have a hug in here.
Just a reminder, if you look at the octopus, you are now his.
Oh. Come on in.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Bye, Mom.
And see. Why is there still an embargo against Cuba?
Happy birthday. I brought you Cuban cigars.
Oh, that sounds very illegal.
It is. Don't ask how I brought them here.
I'm very curious about how you brought them here. I'm not asking. I'm
okay,
just telling
that's
you. I'm
good.
Very
if you want to smoke those, I wouldn't ask.
I'm so actually way more curious about how you got them here than that kind of outweighs the wish to smoke them.
I also brought you this.
Can we just go back?
What? No.
Because you told me that you were just going to Cape Cod. And
right. Well, I also brought you something from my trip to Australia, which is some Vegemite.
Okay.
Don't ask how I got that here.
I am super curious about this. It's just, you know, again, Cape Cod, it's very far from those places.
Well, I had some miles, but I also took a trip to Antarctica, and I brought you a penguin.
I'm a penguin.
Do not ask how I brought it here.
And see. 50 greatest TV stars of all time. Welcome back with the 50 greatest TV stars of all time. We have a tremendous panel here to present to you today. Introduce yourselves.
I'm Carol Channing.
I'm Alan. I'm Alan Arkin.
I'm Jane Fonda.
Yes, all well known for their TV work, perhaps a little better known for the movie work. So tell us, what TV shows were you all on?
Well, and this is Carol Channing. I was on The Dating Game.
Oh, I remember that. I'd forgotten. You with
stole the show there. I left
really
without
did.
A date, but boy, I put on a song and a dance.
You might remember me from MASH.
Oh yes, of course. I thought Alan Alda.
That's well,
Alan Arkin.
We switched roles for a brief time.
I remember in that season, that later season, when Alan Arkin
replaced
Alan Alda. That was interesting. You did it. You brought a whole different feel to that character, I thought.
Thank you.
Well, now, do you remember the time that I subbed in for Hot Lips?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you were all in Match Game together, I think.
We were.
Yes, Match Game.
Jane, tell us about your TV work.
I'm going to be quite honest. I have been struggling with some memory loss recently, and I don't quite remember the TV shows I was on.
Jane, we heard about the concussions from your aerobics videos.
You don't remember the year you were on MASH with us?
I have some flashes occasionally.
Your accent's different ever since you divorced that Atlanta magnate who we won't mention, Ted Turner.
Mm. I mean, we loved him on Match Game.
And scene. Cool. So now one thing we do is this is a long form, what you're doing is our scenes, but when we do level 2, 3 in our shows, what we do a lot of times is structure things. So we call back scenes from earlier and then explore them further, the same characters, and then we can combine scenes together at the end. So you're not really getting that full, you're seeing our sort of scene technique, but not the how it all fits together. Mostly because it's hard with voices only to do that, I think. Plus, we didn't plan it. And improv is all about planning.
I was just getting ready to ask that.
So we didn't really think. Yes. We were like, oh, we'll read these things and do some scenes. So that's great.
I was just getting ready to ask how you plan that. And not to necessarily bring him out, but since he obviously brought himself out, at least in front of me, but David recognized that he... Alan Arkin versus Alan Alda. Yep. So what happens when you do that?
Yeah, oh. So we make everything true. You make it all true. And that's the skill you really learn more than anything in improv, that instead of looking for starting comedy situations, which end up being comedy situations that you've seen before or heard before, really, if you try to come up with a unique one, instead just actually trying to play the scene. So let's do a scene about TV people. And then they're going to try to come up with the names that first come up in the top of their head. They're not trying to be funny. They're just trying to actually come up with a name quick enough to play the part. And then you take mistakes and you turn them into opportunities.
And if it were a longer show, one of the things we would call back in a later scene would probably have something to do with people using the wrong last name.
Or we'd see Alan Arkin in MASH.
Oh, Alan Arkin in MASH. That out.
Or you'd
That's
have
right.
a scene with if someone had an Alan Alda impersonation that was even plausible, then they could confront Alan Arkin. You could have a scene with the two of them. I don't like how, you know.
I don't like how you stole my show.
Yeah, well, but Alan, you know, Alan Alda has that physicality. He kind of leans his shoulders over, right? Yeah, it's so snarky. Kind of. I don't remember how to do it, but you know, you get inspired at the moment, right? Yeah. speaking of which, our next show, live show, is going to be our fall performance groups, which haven't even been formed yet. But they'll be opening on the third Saturday in September, which I'll give you the date of right now. I'm looking right now at my high-tech flip phone, which I accidentally pulled up the calculator by accident instead of the calendar. It'll be the 21st of September, 8 o'clock at the Bridge. You can come out for $10, 10 smackerels, and you can see, as Winnie the Pooh would say, give us... that money, and you can watch people be funny.
Well, you were at the Bridge last night.
We were, yes.
Real quick, we have 1 minute left. So how'd that go?
It was great. My wife and daughter drove by because they went to a grocery store, and they said, looks like there weren't many people there. But we had fun anyway, so there you go.
They were actually just very small people.
They were small.
So they were easy to see over and not notice.
Well, they had to stand on top of the... Everyone had to stand on top of the chairs because they were so small.
And that is the last time we're inviting a nursery school to be in our audience.
It was crazy.
I can understand. I hope they paid full price anyway. There was no discount for kids.
No discount.
No.
A lot of tears.
So our show today, folks from the Big Blue Door doing long-form improv comedy. David Luzader, also known as Alan Arkin. Sarah Adams was here. Marjorie Ruderman. And Joel Jones from Big Blue Door. You can find them at bigbluedoor.org.
Yes.
And all the shows going on.
Yeah, well, we don't have our full fall set up yet. We do have some. I can quickly say that we have we'll have a fall improv run that's going to be starting soon. And that first show I just mentioned, we have an Improv 1 class, an Improv 2 class. We'll have this Telling True Stories class continue to go on. We're going to have later in the year, we'll have a first scripted show. We'll have a winter run. We're also going to have a first children's show. So I've got hopefully my daughter Ellie and other people have little kids can bring them and see a show of that. That should be fun.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We don't need luck.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.